Welcome to Bondcast, a podcast series where we discuss our views on the latest themes and events shaping rates markets. I'm Imogen Bakra, head of non-dollar rate strategy, and I'm joined today by our global market specialist, Joanne Spadigan and Deepika Dayal, which I'm very excited because I think it's probably our first ever recorded episode of an all-female cast on Bondcast. So good news for us. And I'm also very excited because we're recording after US inflation and after the ECB, which felt like the two events this week that the market was really waiting for. So I'm happy that we have lots to talk about and lots of market volatility. Deepika, I will start with you because, like I say, that US inflation print was the kind of key event for the week. It was very quiet in the first half of the week as we waited for this backloaded data week. Another month of an upside surprise in the US inflation print. How concerned are you about these kind of couple of months of upside surprises signaling a reacceleration in inflation in the US?
Thank you for having me here. And you're absolutely right. The March CPI report was a definite event for market participants across the board, I would think. We got a third monthly gain of 0.4% in the core CPI. And that seemed to have disturbed the idea that the first few two prints in the year, which were January and February, were reflecting a little bit of seasonality in the services numbers, something we've seen over the last 2 years and something that seemed to have been exaggerated this year. And our own expectation was that that fades away. I believe the market was also looking for the same. But the 0.4% gain on an unrounded basis was 0.359, virtually matching the 0.358 that we saw in February. So that definitely was a little unsettling. Though when we dug into the details of the report, a big chunk of that move in March was coming from one component, which was motor vehicle insurance costs. Now, those costs don't tend to move with the economic cycle. So it's not like if we're moving towards a slowdown, they start coming down. So we saw 2.6% gain in that number yesterday, and that added about a tenth to the core CPI by itself. So it was an outsized gain. We do think that motor vehicle insurance costs, at least over the next few months, will keep adding to it. Though we are suspect of the strength in that number being repeated over the next few months. So our expectation in general is that inflation prints could show some moderation in the coming months, especially yesterday, because even with the gain in motor vehicle insurance costs and medical care costs, which added another half a tenth to the core CPI, other components did show some moderation, especially the housing inflation numbers, which the Fed and other market participants have also focused on over the last 1 year. And those numbers have started coming down. So our expectation remains that we will see some moderation in the coming months in inflation prints. Of course, our early expectation was that that would happen sometime by the end of Q2. Now, these numbers have sort of moved that out towards Q3. So our expectation, our projections still look for inflation to start cooling down, especially after this morning's PPI numbers, which suggested that core PCE prices are going to be up another 0.3% on the month, a little similar to February, but they're not going to be as strong as the 0.5% that we saw in January. So, yes, but optically, that 0.4% on the core CPI yesterday will not work, especially from the Fed perspective, I think.
And I think that's right. You know, it's really thinking about this inflation print from the Fed's perspective, which is why obviously the market was so focused on it. You know, it felt like the print that was either going to potentially make or break, you know, whether the Fed could possibly cut rates as soon as June or not. And, you know, that was our kind of base case heading into the print. And then obviously, as you say, it was kind of disappointing from that angle. So what are you thinking, or how are you thinking this plays out now in terms of the Fed's reaction function for the rest of the year?
I think that is the question, Imogen. So we thought about it as well. And given the 3.4% prints within the core CPI, for the core CPI, we don't think the Fed would be comfortable going. Like, these are not the kind of prints that would give them greater confidence, especially after they've seen 0.2, 0.3 type prints over the course of last year. Our thinking is that we would see the Fed waiting, being able to wait a little more and seeing inflation prints actually show some moderation, at least back to the 0.2, 0.3 type prints, which we have folded in, we have assumed in our forecast. But our understanding is that with those three consecutive 0.4 prints, the Fed would not be willing to go in June. Basis that, we have also updated our Fed call. We're now looking for the Fed to start cutting in September. At the September meeting, going with the first 25 bips cut, then following it up with another 25 basis point cut in November, and then doing another cut at the December meeting, and then doing six more cuts over the course of next year, because we would start seeing inflation moderating by then, and our own estimates look for growth to soften a bit, which is slightly different from what the Fed is expecting. We could see the median dot move from 3 to 2 at the June meeting, but our own expectation is that the growth momentum starts slowing down in H2, given all the tightening that we've seen over the last 2 years or so. And basis that, we would think that they would be able to deliver 3 cuts versus what the Fed might suggest with 2 cuts at the June meeting.
Just finally, how are you thinking about the Fed's easing cycle and the election cycle? There's lots of, you know, question marks about whether they can really cut rates in November, given how, you know, the proximity of the meeting to the election, etc.
You're absolutely right, Imogen. That's definitely a question. And I believe that's also another factor behind them trying to begin cutting rates in September instead of November. There's a Fed meeting 2 days after the election day. Of course, there were no results by then, but instead of sounding or appearing as a more political move, starting with the rate cut at that point, they may want to begin in September if growth and inflation pan out the way that we're expecting it to. And then once they start, they can keep going without creating any big ripples there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Great. Thank you, Deepika. Okay, Joanne, over to you, because it wasn't only about the US this week. Of course, we had the ECB meeting too, although I did make a mental note to myself to check the transcript tomorrow for how many times the Fed was mentioned, because I think they probably set a record in that press conference for the number of times that the Fed has been mentioned in an ECB press conference. We were expecting this to be, I guess, a placeholder meeting and a continuation of the kind of dovish tones that we've heard over the last couple of weeks from ECB members. Were there any other kind of key takeaways that you would want to highlight from today's meeting?
Yeah, so like you said, Imogen, lots of questions around the Fed in the Q&A. I think for markets, there are a couple of things to note. Firstly, in terms of the path and obviously the rate cuts coming through, but the ECB's base case definitely still remains at the June meeting, with a 25 basis point quite likely at that point. I think what was interesting, of course, was the idea that we obviously get a renewed sense of forecast in June, and that will be important. The ECB has placed some weight on that, stating that the June forecast will have to come in and give them the confidence to cut. There's a lot of data to come between now and June, both from the euro area and from the US as well, that will be important to feed into the process. But I do think overall we expect the June forecast to be pretty much in line with the March forecast, even with the big range of shifts in data considered, including a shift in the market pricing for cuts after the US data yesterday, so the US CPI, obviously a resilient US picture, so global growth being quite positive, and then your area inflation prints as well, there will be coming in, and oil price development. So I think overall all of that shouldn't shift too much, or deviate too much from the March forecast at that point. In terms of kind of the amount of cuts priced in for this year, markets are currently pricing 75 basis points. Our base case is still for 100, but I do think it's a bit too difficult to push back too strongly on the market at this point, just given that we need a downside surprise in inflation, I think, to shift pricing for the ECB dovish once again. There's a lot of uncertainty at this point about the path for rates for the ECB, whether they cut 25 in June and then pause and then cut in September and later on in the year, or if they cut in June and July. I think we really need to look at the data, perhaps to see how that comes in to have a stronger view on the path. ECB sources came in after the meeting, as they usually do, not really adding too much to the discussion there, but they did note that some of the doves, of course, would prefer to go 25 in June and July, but the hawks may prefer to wait, given the Fed, of course, may be delayed at this stage.
Yeah, perhaps let's just pick up on that Fed point, because, you know, the Fed or US data and Fed expectations have been leading global fixed income. And I think there is a perception everywhere that, you know, no one can cut until the Fed has. And, you know, if the Fed's not easing this year, then we don't get very much by the way of cuts from the ECB or the BOE, perhaps. How does that fit with your view from the euro area? Obviously now, you know, as Deepika has just gone through, we're expecting slightly less in terms of easing from the Fed. Does that influence how much you think the ECB can ease in 2024 too?
So we've been saying this for a long time. I think we've been getting questions more about the Fed than the ECB in many of our client discussions. But I think what really matters for markets is that the market does believe the Fed will cut rates versus the exact timing and whether there's a small lag or not. I also think what's more important for this year, at least, is the idea that the time of the ECB cut, so June, is less determined by the Fed, but perhaps the amount of cuts to come this year is more determined by the Fed than not. So the depth of the rate cutting cycle versus the timing of the rate cutting cycle. So I think those two points are quite important to note. The ECB is obviously setting up for a June cut, and I think that is warranted given the data in the euro area. Inflation in the euro area has obviously surprised to the downside in the last print, and we do expect that European inflation will continue to moderate lower. So I do think that obviously there's a difference in the picture for inflation in the euro area versus the US. And as Lagarde said in the press conference, they will react to European data, and European data is what matters most. So I do think that as long as we get a path for inflation that follows the ECB's forecast at the moment, they will cut in June, regardless of the Fed's timing for this year. But I think it probably means that they are a bit more cautious on the way down. Turning to gilts now, Imogen, we also had gilts being impacted by US data this week. The front end, let's start with that. And do you have any kind of thoughts about whether this repricing we've seen in the UK driven by the US is justified at this stage?
I think the short answer is it's not really that justified. You know, when we look at what's driven the UK market this week, we've had an upside surprise in US data, which of course is not at all related necessarily to what's happening or what the kind of inflation outlook is in the UK. And then we had Megan Green on the wires who repeated, I think word for word, and I didn't print out both copies to prove that, but almost word for word about how the UK is at more risk of essentially more persistent inflationary pressures than the US. And therefore, the market should be pricing in a shallower easing cycle or a later easing cycle from the BOE than for the US, which, like I say, is word for word what she said in February. And that kind of added to the sell-off in UK rates this morning. So the fact that it's a, you know, somewhat hawkish member repeating what we'd heard previously, and then also US data rather than domestic data that surprised to the upside, I think that there's kind of little justification for such a large move in UK rates over the last 24, 48 hours. A couple of points I would just make about the front end, though, is that although I think that the pricing out of a full rate cut, which is pretty much where we've got to now in the UK, as we're recording this, seemed a little extreme, I do think that the pricing for June now looks more fair. So regular listeners will know that our base case for the BOE for a long time has been that the first cut comes in August. Of course, we acknowledge that there are risks that they could cut earlier in June, but that's not our base case. And so market pricing now of less than a kind of 50% chance of a 25 bip cut in June feels more close to kind of fair than perhaps we were a week ago. But the second point then, like I've just said, is that August remains our base case. And that is regardless of what the Fed is doing. I think it's worth noting that front end rates in the UK have pretty much moved kind of tick for tick for what is happening in the US this year. And, you know, this perception, kind of like I was saying earlier when I was talking to you, Joanne, this perception that, you know, the Fed leads the global central banking cycle and that no one can do anything until the Fed has done anything, I think is very much misplaced in the UK. The BOE's reaction function is going to be, especially in the near term, very much driven by the domestic data backdrop. So in that regard, next week is going to be really key, I think. We get labour market data and inflation data in the UK. And I think that's going to could be a pivotal moment in terms of markets being able to understand the diverging outlooks for inflation in the UK and the US, and therefore, you know, the possibility that the central banking reaction functions could also diverge. Like I say, first cut in August. And I think given that the BOE have probably held on for a bit too long at that point, then that will, you know, be the first of a series of cuts. We're not expecting this to be a one-off or a one-and-done type cycle. I think in that regard, you can easily imagine at least kind of 75 to 100 basis points of bank rate easing being delivered in the second half of the year. The market now prices in just about 40 basis points. Regular listeners and readers of our research will know that when that was at about 50 basis points, I thought that was much too low. So clearly at 40 basis points, I think that is far too low as well. And I think that, like I say, next week could actually be a catalyst for a bit of a repricing in the other direction, given that we finally get some UK data on the calendar, and the UK isn't just being kind of whipped around by what's happening elsewhere.
So gilt yields are now well above your 4% target. How do you see things moving from now onwards?
Yeah, it feels a little bit strange to say this because I think one of my personality traits has been that I've thought gilts have been trading far too low in yield for about 3 years now. I think since about, well, not 3 years, since about summer of 2022, I've been broadly bearish gilts. So it feels like I'm going against my, you know, deep down bias to say that they look a bit cheap, but I think it's difficult to argue that fundamentally they should be, you know, where they are in yield right now. Like I say, they've been driven mostly by what's happening elsewhere. We've had this long-held target of four, or fair value target of 4% in 10-year gilts, and I argued at the beginning of this year that I thought that although 4% was fair value, we could see an overshoot because when we entered the year, markets were pricing in far too easy a monetary policy outlook, and they weren't pricing in enough when it came to the kind of supply-demand imbalance risks. As it happens, we probably had a bit of a repricing driven by both of those things, but more so from the Fed. So I'm not trying to suggest that I called that kind of peak in yield perfectly, but I did think that, I did say at the beginning of the year that we would think gilts would look cheap when they got to about 4.3%. And then recently, as the UK data has been better behaved, we kind of ratcheted down that sort of cheap level to 4.2%, which is where we are now. So I think there's probably about 20 basis points of upside at the moment in yields. Like I say, we still have that 4% fair value target, which is driven by our view on bank rate, our inflation outlook, how we see the kind of supply-demand imbalance still weighing on the curve, and, you know, the fact that probably, although we think that the Fed doesn't matter in terms of the immediate policy reaction function, of course, if we get to the end of the year and the Fed still isn't easing policy, that, you know, potentially limits how much further the BOE eases into 2025. So it's not as though I'm suggesting that yields should necessarily be much lower than 4%, but I just think up here at, you know, 4.2 or just over 4.2 in 10-year gilts, we're starting to get to levels that they will look attractive to a broad base of investors. I think it's interesting as well that over the past week, you've had a couple of those stories kind of in the press about investors starting to think about the fact that markets are pricing in too tight a monetary policy reaction function over the next 12 months from the BOE. We also anecdotally have a survey of Japanese investors, for example, who traditionally haven't been big buyers of gilts. And we ask them every month what their kind of preference for foreign bonds is. And often nobody answers that it's the UK, but this month 13% answered that they would be looking to invest in UK bonds. So I think there's a general view or my sense is that we, you know, at these sorts of levels, gilts sort of fairly compensate for the current risks when it comes to supply and demand. And actually, we should see them gravitate back down towards that 4% level. And like I say, I think next week's data could be a trigger or a first trigger for getting back closer to that level, given that it will highlight the diverging kind of inflation outlook between the UK and the US. All right, I think that's enough for this week. Thank you both for joining me. Thank you to our listeners for listening in. Just a reminder, if you liked today's episode, please don't forget to hit the like button and click subscribe so you can get the latest episode as soon as they're available. Thanks, see you next week.